Craig Pittman is a penman, punman, and a podcaster. And I've made him laugh by being alliterative. So we have a good start to today's Arts Alive podcast. My name is Bill DeYoung, and you may have figured out that Craig Pittman, the fabulous writer, historian, humorist, environmentalist, is here. Hi, Craig.
Hey, how you doing?
We're here to talk about your new book, which is, interestingly enough, called Welcome to Florida. And is this your sixth or seventh?
This is number seven.
Seventh. A couple of days ago, you had an official book launch over at Tombolo for Welcome to Florida. Was that fun?
Well, they rejected my idea of using a trebuchet to actually launch the books into passing cars. But other than that, it was great.
Like one of those things that shoots T-shirts.
Yeah, that's fabulous. But more like a medieval siege engine.
Well, seventh book. This is a collection of pieces from essentially the Florida Phoenix, and there was a couple from Flamingo, and something called Crime Reads.
Yes,
which you have to tell me what Crime Reads is.
I love Crime Reads. It's an online publication for people who love murder mysteries, and it's part of this group called not Literary Digest, but something like that. Mm-hmm. But they occasionally I'll write something for them, but I read them pretty faithfully because my whole family were mystery fans.
Yeah,
growing up, my grandfather worshipped at the altar of Earl Stanley Gardner and Perry Mason. Mm-hmm. My mom was a big fan of Agatha Christie, and one day when I was 14, my great aunt called me over and said, "I think you're ready for Travis McGee now." Well, she took a puff on her Pall Mall, and she was right, I was. And so,
are you one of those people that watches Dateline religiously? We're into a show called New York Homicide now.
Oh, really?
Or the gritty detectives say, it was a grisly scene, you know.
No, but I've been on Forensic Files twice. Does that count?
we saw you at least once. I remember seeing you on Forensic Files once.
There you go.
You were wearing a tie. You haven't worn a tie in a while.
I still had hair then, too.
You're from Pensacola?
Correct.
That area? Okay.
Yes.
Now, you worked for the Times for 30 years, and now you're a freelancer for all these various publications. Do you find this, in a way, you're an environmental reporter for the Times, but you also mm-hmm. wrote, I imagine, features and...
Yeah, and I wrote some columns, too.
Okay. Do you find this more liberating now to where you don't have editor A looking down at you and then sending it to editor B and saying, "You need to cut this or change this"? You have more freedom now.
I miss the newsroom camaraderie, but on the other hand, the number of mandatory staff meetings has dropped to zero.
But I'm wondering, because the way you write is such a, to use a word by Bob Devon Jones that he's famous for, it's a delicious mix of of history and humor reporting. It's storytelling is what it is. And I haven't finished the book. I've read most of it. I mm-hmm. literally only got it a couple of days ago. What I've come away with is it's this great sense of you're taking me on an adventure.
Yeah.
You know, and God bless you, because you're a reporter. I learn things along mm-hmm. the way. I don't always want to learn things, but, you know, you've helped me do that. But they're environmental in nature, so many
Most of
these.
Them, yeah.
It's very much, look how people are screwing up Florida.
Mm-hmm. And look at how people are fighting back, too.
That's the good people, the good guys are in here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you hated Rick Scott. You don't have a lot of love for Mr. DeSantis, and we'll just leave it there.
I prefer to call him Ron Disastrous.
Yeah, that's one of the polite ones. So, you know, real life being stranger than fiction, you know, another thing I would say that I would come at you with is that it's not, as we've talked about before, just a collection of like weird Florida stories. People, you know, in a flamingo suit with a bazooki and a scythe and a pawn shop or whatever. You know that this is real life, and it's mm-hmm. just as absurd.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Carl Hyson always says he doesn't make anything up. He just changes the names.
How did you get interested in writing this kind of stuff? I mean, again, this is where I was going before. You were a sort of standard issue reporter, just this is what is happening. But how did you get interested in turning a corner into making it more personal and more humorous?
I think I have to credit my dad for that. My dad, who was a land surveyor in Pensacola for, mm-hmm. gosh, 50 years, I guess, he loved making people laugh. He actually, you know, would... There was a time he went to a surveyor's convention once, and he was cracking so many jokes, people thought he was the entertainment for the convention. And I used to hate going with him to Sears or any place like that, because what should have been a 10-minute trip would always wind up being an hour, because he'd run into somebody he knew, and they'd wind up swapping stories. And, you know, that just became a sort of a valuable thing to me.
You got the gene.
Yeah, I do. That and his raucous laugh that occasionally embarrasses my children.
So, I mean, have you always considered yourself a storyteller? What I meant was, is there a leap that one takes between being a reporter? You know, I've been a reporter in newspapers.
And, yeah.
And there are certain lines you have to toe, as it were. Suddenly, you know, I think Mr. Klinkenberg found this out, too, that you can be yourself.
Yeah.
And people still will enjoy it because you know what you're doing. Was there a moment that happened? Did the Times used to let you write this sort of thing?
I think the key was when I started writing books. The first one was Paving Paradise, which I co-wrote with a guy named Matt Waite, where we had done this big investigation about all the wetlands permits that the Corps of Engineers gives out in Florida. And after the series came out and it won a couple of awards, Gary Mormino from USF called me up and said, hey, have you thought about turning that into a book? And I said, no, should we? And he said, yes, and you should come to lunch at my office next tomorrow and bring with you a one-page pitch for a book based on this. And that's where it all started.
Wow.
And so in writing the book, you know, we couldn't just do it, you know, inverted pyramid style because it's a book. So you have to tell the story of how you went out and got the information and describe the people you went and talked to. And
why do you care so much? That's my question to you about Florida. I mean, you know, nobody's pouring money down your throat, so there's not that to look the other way, but you don't look the other way. Are you kind of the mind that somebody has to do this to report this stuff?
Well, I think some of it goes back to John D. McDonald. You know, my great aunt introducing me to John D. McDonald, who wrote all these great mysteries about Travis McGee, and a lot of them involved bad guys who were, as he called them, the fast buck artists who were trying to pave over Florida. And then some of it also from, you know, when I was growing up, I was a Boy Scout, so we went camping and canoeing, and I fell in love with the nature of Florida then.
Yeah.
So this is a way to kind of combine those two interests and put them all together and possibly make some money.
And you must read a lot. I think probably a lot of us do in what we do. I mean, I probably don't read as much as I should.
I try to read about 52 books a year.
Yeah.
That's my goal, half nonfiction, half fiction.
Do you discover things all the time about this state that, you know, were underreported? Or do you see something and go, I can find a way into this?
Some of it's stuff that I've spotted in various newspapers, Fort Myers News Press, Sarasota Herald Tribune, Tallahassee Democrat. Some of it's stuff that people call me up or send me emails and say, hey, do you know about this going on? Let me tell you about it. And so, you know, that's how this stuff comes up. The very first story in the book comes from Charles Lee from the Audubon Society saying, hey, have you heard about this? And holy cow, what a twisted tale.
This is Yeehaw Junction talking about.
This is the Yeehaw Junction story.
Is that Indian River County? Is that where that is? Over there on the other
coast. It's where State Road 60 and the Florida Turnpike cross.
Yeah, well, it's north of Vero Beach, Sebastian, and that area is probably south of Melbourne Beach.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, Yeehaw Junction, famous bordello that was there. And
some truck took the whole building out, right?
Yeah, that was very sad. So,
it really was.
But this developer came in and he was going to build a new eco community there called Destiny, and he partnered up with a guy who was the founder of the Subway sandwich chain, and then things started falling apart. They wound up suing each other. The police got involved. Somebody got arrested, and it just the whole thing just went kaflooey, and it was just a wild story. And I think I mentioned in the way I wrote the thing that when I got this guy on the phone, I almost couldn't get him off the phone because he had so much to tell me.
And he was just one of those guys, who was just such a huckster and
colorful. He could have been a John D. McDonald character, or a Carl Hiaasen character. He wore alligator shoes with alligator eyes, and he had a moat around his home.
Oh, I remember reading that.
Yes.
Yeah. And it cost a ton of money. And didn't he write it off to the company?
Yes.
Yeah.
He wrote off the cost of the cooler that he had to put in the moat because it was too hot for the fish.
The cooler.
Yes.
You know, I mean, listen, Hiaasen has said it. Everybody, you can't make this stuff up. You know, you've said it. I've heard you say that before. What a story. There was an endangered bird in the middle of all this, wasn't there?
The Florida grasshopper sparrow. And, you know, so he's touting this eco development, but the eco development would wipe out the eco.
But he said something like, we lose a couple of birds, what's the big deal?
Yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that. Oh my God.
You literally are breaking eggs to make that omelet.
these things write themselves. A story that I made a note of that I wanted to talk to you about had a personal connection to you, which is the one called Two Toms and Three Ks.
Yes.
About Mr. Wentworth, the historian from Pensacola.
From Pensacola. And when I was in Boy Scouts, he was one of my merit badge counselors.
Yeah. Tell me about Mr. Wentworth. Let's tell the listeners. listeners about this.
T.T. Wentworth, at one time, this was in the 1920s, he was the youngest elected official in Florida. He was the commissioner, he was a county commissioner, and then he became the tax collector. And he was the tax collector for years. And meanwhile, he got interested in history, and he started collecting historic artifacts. And then he built a museum and put all his historic artifacts on display there. And so when I'd go there to get my merit badge counseling, all of a sudden he'd say, hey, let me show you something. He'd take me around to show me the stuff that he had.
The petrified cat.
The petrified cat. He showed it to me every single time like I hadn't seen it before. But then, and, you know, and so I grew up and moved away from Pensacola, and I didn't really think about him again until I heard that this new guy had come along, whose name is also Tom, mm-hmm. very interested in local history, and had discovered T.T. Wentworth's secret that he had been a not just a member, but a high official in the Ku Klux Klan.
It was a grand wizard, dragon, persnickety something.
Yeah, and you know, basically he was one of the reasons why you didn't find any history of black people in his museum that was now state-owned. The state had taken over the museum and, you know, had named it the T.T. Wentworth Jr.
Museum. This is long after he was dead.
Yes.
They discovered all this.
Yeah.
And they found it in his letters or his paperwork.
In his personal collection that he kept in his home, which, you know, after he died, his family donated all that stuff to the state. And he was such a hoarder, he wouldn't throw it away, you know? So that's why the guy, they found his robes in there.
So his robes right there next to the petrified cat.
Yeah.
Well, I remember you said that he had they made him pay for his own robe, and it was kind of, I think you called it a racist Ponzi scheme.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, apparently that's what it was that, you know, they tried to sign people up to join the Klan, and then they'd sell them the robes, and then they'd sell them this, and they'd sell them that.
Wow.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
It's grifting all the way down.
Uh-huh. The environmental bent of a lot of these stories, you know, it's obviously very heartfelt for you. And there was one, the one about sea turtles. And you mentioned that it was a life-changing experience the first time you saw, I guess, a loggerhead nesting. It was for me, too. I was, you know, in my 20s and writing for the Gainesville Sun. And I have since taken, you know, my wife has gone with me and my kids, who are adults now. I used to take them to Melbourne Beach every summer.
Oh, that's awesome.
I felt that when I read what you wrote. I'm turning the pages with you. Where is this going to go? It's so interesting. And you write, you don't talk down to us. It's not like a lot of newspaper writing, well, I guess used to be, where they want to impress you with how much they know or how much they can squeeze into a space.
Yeah.
I'm going on the adventure with you.
Yeah.
Tell me the story about Infinity the right whale. That's
oh,
just so
God.
Sad.
So the right whales are one of the rarest whales in the world.
Of
they
course.
Live most of the year up in New England, but then they come down here like in the spring, and the females give birth to their calves, usually off the coast of St. Augustine, Fernandina Beach, the area. And Fernandina even has a right whale festival, which I have never been to, but I want to go because I want to see if they actually like blow up big whale floats and have a parade.
Do you want to tell people why it's called the right whale? Do you remember?
They were named the right whale because the whalers considered them the right whale to hunt because they yielded the most oil and they were easy to catch and
they're
all
slow
things. yeah so
when you say catch, like, ooh, they threw a net over. No, they were easy to harpoon. Folks.
So anyway, so I start off the story about this particular right whale mom and calf by telling about a boat crash where a 65-foot boat with seven passengers runs into something and starts to sink, and the captain grounds the boat, and it turns out they've hit one of these whales. They've hit a calf.
I think I hit a whale. I saw some blood in the water.
Yeah, they hit a calf, and then a few days later they discover the calf's mom, whose name is Infinity, has also been killed. And they paid no penalty for this because it's not what they did was not against the law.
Does that make you crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, are you literally like pounding the table while you're writing this stuff? Like, I can't believe this.
No, but I am thinking good ways to make fun of these people.
Yeah. Well, you do that.
I figure mockery is my strongest suit.
You know, it's so funny that you have recurring motifs in the story. I knew the petrified cat was going to come up at the end of that story. And I want to talk about your podcast, which coincidentally is also called Welcome to Florida.
Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah, it's just a universal truth.
I'm just
really
trying to teach everybody that WTF stands for Welcome to Florida. I just want them to remember that.
It does now. And of course, Welcome to Florida is broadcast. You can find it on the St. Pete Catalyst site.
And Apple and Spotify and all that stuff.
Thank you. This is the guy with the creative fertile mind here. 245 episodes?
Yeah, we've been doing it for 4 years. Chad Scott loved my – I wrote a book about Florida Panthers called Cattail.
Cattail, sure.
Chad read it and loved it and then got in touch with me and said, have you thought about doing a podcast? And I said, I pitched one when I was at the Times, but we never did it. And he said, talk to me. And,
pitch away,
and,
buddy.
Yeah, and so we started doing it, and we've been doing it for 4 years now, and it's surprisingly successful. He sent me some stats that we're reaching people in like 74 countries now, which I just pray we don't start an international incident. That's that's my big concern. The conceit of the podcast is that 900 new people move here every day, mm-hmm. and most of them have no idea what they've gotten themselves into. So we try to clue them in and let them know that, you know, there are special things about this place once you get beyond the theme parks and, you know.
Every Tuesday when it comes, I mean, I do the editing and the workup to get it out in the catalyst. So I'm always looking for, like, what's he talking about this time? And there's all kinds of little obscure corners. You know, it's the old, what is it, old bromide or the old adage or it's the old wives' tale, I don't know, the old something, that everybody has a story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it's stuff that you probably didn't know about before you heard the podcast. I mean, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, mm-hmm. you know what they're all about?
I remember that one. I do now.
You do now, yeah. the guy who was, I'm trying to think of his name.
You had one called on Mullet like two weeks ago.
Yeah. Which I'd been wanting to do for the whole time. And we finally got somebody who could talk about Mullet, the fish, not the hairstyle.
You were able to do the whole kind of Joe Dirt hairstyle. jokes.
You know, and we did one, a memorable one with a roach expert where I had to, like, I was waving hands around my head the whole time we were talking to him.
I didn't listen to that
but
one.
But that's an important thing for people to know about. Yeah. Flying versus non-flying.
There's no end to it.
No.
There's no end. Do you have an idea list? Like, well, I've got 50 more in the hopper.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it, you know, we've come nowhere near running out of topics in 4 years, you know, doing this weekly. And I think Florida's just the gift that keeps on giving.
And it's like you said, just to reiterate this one, that you read so much that things suggest themselves to you all the time. Mm-hmm. It's great for
me. And people suggest things too. People contact me and say, hey, did you know that Florida has more carnivorous plants than any other state? And I'm like, holy cow, I did not. So
have you done that one yet?
Yes, we did. It was fascinating. I think it'll eat at you.
There
there was a photo that went viral several years ago where it was a guy, there was an alligator standing in front of a store window, and a guy comes up and picks up the alligator and slings it over his shoulder and walks into the store.
A live alligator.
And the alligator's wearing a t-shirt. And the alligator's name is Sweetie, and he's blind. And that's why the guy has to kind of keep track of him and take care of him.
This is Sweetie's caretaker.
This is Sweetie's caretaker.
I thought it was some guy picked him up.
No. Wow. He's an alligator wrangler, and he takes Sweetie around to the schools to show off, you know, that alligator, you shouldn't be afraid of alligators, but treat them with respect. But, you know, otherwise you'll be known as Lefty. But, you know, and it was just a fascinating story. So I lined him up to be our first guest, and he talked to us all about alligators and about Sweetie. And
you know, there's a famous story about the St. Petersburg Alligator Farm, which I wrote about in one of those vintage books. It was in the 30s, late 20s, early 30s. There were just sort of open pits with fences, and a lady had her chow, her dog, with her, and it fell in. Ooh. And literally, if you go and look at the advertisement, you know, Big Ben or something, you know, the 14-footer, gone, the dog is gone. But in their advertisement, said, come see Big Ben, who ate the dog.
Oh, God.
You couldn't make this stuff up.
And there's also a section of the book about crime, because I used to cover courts for the Times. And there's a piece in there on sort of saying farewell to Tim Dorsey, who I think we're all our lives are a lot poorer for his departure.
Yeah, so. I saw him mentioned in the preface. And so that doesn't surprise me. Well, what happens next for you? I mean, are you going on a book tour? You go national TV? What's?
Well, I'm going to be popping in at various independent bookstores around Florida over the next month or so. I'm going to Gainesville, to the Lynx bookstore that Lauren Groff started. Midtown Reader in Tallahassee, Copperfish Books in Punta Gorda, Books and Books down in Coral Gables. And then I'm going to be at Word of South, the big Tallahassee festival. You know, USF St. Pete is going to have the Florida Studies Book Festival. It's the first time event, and I'm going to be at that too.
Who's putting that on? I got to look that one up. I'll try and worm my way into
that. It's USF St. Pete, as far as I know.
I'll look it up. We don't have Colette, and we don't have the Festival of Reading, I guess, anymore.
Yeah, so. I'm very sad about that.
Yeah, because it was always a thing. I guess that's about it.
Okay.
I had another question, but I'll email you, because I can't remember what the hell it was. Greg Pittman, always a pleasure.
Great talking to you.
Always a pleasure. And, you know, all the best with your seventh book here.
Thank you, sir.
It is available at Tombolo Books, of course. And I suspect since it's University Press of Florida, you can get it. You can get it from them. You can get it not only from Amazon, but from other fine booksellers, yes, both online and brick and mortar.
I have one thing I wanted to tell you, though.
Uh-oh.
I wanted to credit the front cover, which I suspect will sell more books than my name on the cover. That's a drawing by the very gifted cartoonist from Pensacola, Andy Marlette, who also does a comic strip called Shrimp and Grits.
He did one of your last ones.
He did the last one, yeah. Yeah, the my previous collection, The State You're In.
The State You're In.
Yeah, which is, what's the subhead? Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife. That was the last one. And that one was a collection of stuff from over like a 30-year period. This is more like the last 5 years.
This is like 2021, 22. Yeah. And yeah. And
there's one story in here from the Times, and that's the one on the shell collector. There was a guy in Jacksonville who had the largest personal shell collection of anybody in the world.
Speaking of that, the Sanibel story knocked me out.
Oh, isn't that
too
wild? Yes.
It's like there is a story everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one I had wanted to do for a long time, too. And finally it dawned on me, hey, I know who I can talk to about this. I can talk to Randy Wayne White. I bet he knows.
So that's right.
Sure enough.
Randy knows everything and everybody down there. And he's an amazing guy, too. Craig Pittman, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And happy trails.
Thank you.